Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today we're going to our mailbox again. You have sent us a lot of questions, and we hope to get through a lot of them. Before we do that, Flash Player has been acting up. On Video Poker for Winners, which the software, Video Poker software, uses Flash Player, and it was not supported as of January 1st. Since then, Microsoft has anything that included Flash Player no longer opens at all. So what happened is they recompiled the program, taking out Flash Player, and they could not use Super Times Pay without Flash Player, which is not a major loss. There's no strategic changes to it. You can use a regular game and get the same feedback as to when you're right or wrong. So if you have Video Poker for Winners and you've registered it, a new license has been installed. If you go to videopokerforwinners.com/downloads, you have a one-time download to get the new version, which everything is the same, except there's no Super Times Pay. If you need more than one download, they, after your first one, they're $10 a piece. Okay, let's go to the questions for our listeners. While playing on a team in a casino, was there any moment when someone blew the cover in such a way that it was at once upsetting and laughable?
Well, I have a couple of stories. They were not my team, but there are stories worth repeating. One,
love your stories. Please do.
So one, this had to be more than 40 years ago, but there was a guy reading hole cards using a wheelchair to sit lower. So he's in a wheelchair. The BP is sitting at the table. And he looks over and he sees security guards forming, looking over in his direction. And what he didn't realize is that a guy had had a heart attack. And so security was over there talking about it, and it was generally in the direction of this guy sitting in the wheelchair. But he didn't know that. He completely freaked out, jumped up out of the wheelchair, and ran out of the casino. And the BP looks at the dealer, who's thoroughly confused, and says, "Praise Jesus, it's a miracle." The other story that I really like is this this kid who had played in Atlantic City. Now, remember, in Atlantic City, they weren't allowed to bar you. And again, this goes back many, many years. But so they weren't allowed to bar you, and he had heard these stories about Las Vegas and people getting backroomed and people getting beaten up, and he was coming out to Vegas for his first time. And was really nervous about it. And so he's playing in the casino, and he starts winning, and of course is seeing heat around every corner. Every time anyone looks at him, he's convinced they're onto him and that he's got all this heat and they're going to drag him in the back room. So he gets up from the table, and he sees a security guard looking at him, so he kind of ducks behind the slot machine, and the security guard thinks the guy looks a little strange. So the security guard starts following him, and so now he's weaving in and out of slot machines trying to lose the security guard, and he ducks into the bathroom. He goes into a stall, and he's sitting on the toilet counting all of his chips. And suddenly this head appears over the top of the stall, and it's the security guard. And he says, "What are you doing?" And the guy goes, I was just counting my chips." And he says, "In the women's bathroom."
Ha.
So those are the two that come to mind for me.
Doing my business in a woman's bathroom accidentally actually has happened to me once, unrelated to casinos. And when I saw female high heels in the stall next to me, I lifted my shoes off the floor so they couldn't see what big shoes I had. And when everything was quiet and nobody seemed to be there, I made a run for it successfully. But I didn't want to have to explain what I was doing there, because although I suspect nothing would have happened, because it was an accident. Next question. While on a trip, have you ever felt threatened in such a way that you were thinking your life was at stake? And I'm going to start off with this one. After I married Shirley in 1995, our first Valentine's Day, I spent all night gambling at Treasure Island while she was upstairs in a new red negligee, thinking there were things that took precedence over a good promotion on Valentine's Day. When I got back to the room, like 6 o'clock in the morning, maybe or eight, she threw an ashtray at me, didn't miss by much. And it wasn't because she wasn't trying to hit me with it. I'm not sure my life was at stake, but I could have been injured pretty badly.
Yeah, the only time I really felt in danger was in Moscow, and I just I really, I had an incident where I got caught between two factions of the Chechenian mob over a casino that didn't pay me, and they didn't have the money to pay me. And the way things work in Russia is that businesses have what's called a roof, which is your local mobster that you pay, you pay off in order to have your business. And when there's a dispute, you go to them. And the guy helping me, his roof was a Chechen mobster that was higher than the Chechen mobster that was above this particular casino. And once I got kind of entangled in the middle of all this, I just thought, what the hell am I doing? This is crazy. And the murder rate in Moscow was really high anyway. And anyway, yeah, in Moscow, it's the only place that I played where I really did not feel safe. And once I got back, I swore I would never go back there again. And also, that was around the time when my kids were young, and I just thought, I'm not going to go anywhere that doesn't seem safe to me. So, yeah, that was the only time.
Yeah, that sounds scary. Sure trumps my ashtray story. I'm going to let you try this next one first. Name people you desperately want for the show, but have not been guests so far.
Oh, well, the usual suspects, James Grosjean, Jelko, Bill Benter, another person those are people I know, but another person who I really don't know, but I would love to have on the show is Huck Seed. He won the World Series of Poker, and he's the guy who's made a lot of really
Prop
crazy
bets.
prop bets. Yeah, so he'd be a great guest. Another one, Mike Svobodny, who was in my book. Those are the first ones that come to mind for me.
Yeah, I agree with all those. Eric Seidel would probably be on the list.
Yeah.
Actually, I'd like to interview Steve Wynn about his vision for creating casinos, but he had a fall from grace over sexual harassment charges a few years ago, so this is going to taint anything he has to say, so this is never going to happen. But
Actually, you know, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
the guy did a lot for casinos in Vegas.
Yeah, another one that I would love to have on the show is Ted Whiting, who's, head of surveillance for all the MGM properties. And, I think he'd make a really interesting a guest. And I know that he would like to do it, but I guess corporate, is not in favor of that.
Yes, I have asked him, and they didn't think it was such a good idea, and I had asked him back at the time when we were still doing the shows in studio rather than over Skype or Zoom or something like that, and I told him that I was pretty sure the day he was going to be there was a day that Richard was going to be sick and would have to phone in. So, good. Next is a question that's basically for me. It says, triple double bonus wheel poker, pay schedule 7-5. Would the playing strategy be the same if you're playing 5 cents, 25 cents, or $1? My comment: this is an awful game. It returns about 95% when played correctly, and it has a very, very high variance. To play it well, you have to assume the wheel spin is worth 428 coins and generate your own strategy. The denomination of the game doesn't matter, as long as the pay schedule is the same. Another video poker question. Someone found a $25 denomination 9-6 jacks or better game, where the 5-coin straight flush paid 239 coins instead of 250. Wants to know what's going on. And that pay schedule was invented for $5 machines. On a $5 machine, 239 times $5 is 1195, which is just below the W2G threshold. So while it was created for $5 machines, it's occasionally found on other denominations as well. It makes the game worth 99.520% instead of 99.544%. Yes, it's an extra couple hundredths, but it wouldn't, in most places, it would not change whether it was the best machine or not. Any advice for how to handle being ratted out by another AP? Like you mentioned in the last show.
Not really. I mean, there's two schools, I guess, the retribution school or the, move on with your life and keep going. I don't have any particular good way to handle that. The eye for an eye people. If everyone believes in an eye for an eye, eventually everyone's blind. So, I mean, in my own case, I just moved on. What can you do? I mean, I certainly let other people know about it, but that he was a person that could not be trusted.
Yeah, for me, that's happened a few times. Once by a team member for a big team, and who tried to get me fired from writing for Casino Player and Strictly Slots. And so the publisher of those magazines forwarded me the guy's letter with his name and everything. So I contacted him and said, I know who's on his team. Do you really want to play this game? And he backed off. Another player got me fired from a writing gig at Gaming Today, which was a weekly newspaper in Las Vegas. And over a silly reason, but again, you have to move on.
Actually, another thing that's interesting is I had someone, when I first started doing this show, I had someone come to me and say, how can you do this show with Bob Dancer? He ratted you out to a casino. And I said, what are you talking about? And then he claimed that you had ratted me out to a particular casino. And he actually mentioned Frank B. as a, you know, verification for this story. And I thought it sounded pretty crazy when the guy told me, but I went to Frank B., and Frank B. was like, I have no idea what this guy is talking about. So, but I remember when I first started the show, I, you know, would hear these stories about you, why I shouldn't trust you, all these kind of things. But the person who put us together to do the show had told me ahead of time, look, he's got a lot of people who think crazy things about him. I've known him for years. I don't believe any of it. I don't think it's true, but you ought to be aware of it going in. So when this guy came up with this story at the time, I was like, okay, sounds crazy, but he's telling me that Frank B. said it. So, you know, I'll at least hear what Frank has to say. And as I said, Frank was like, I have no idea what the guy's talking about.
Yep. I was a target for a long time for those kind of stories. People, I think they were due to, I was telling people how to beat the casinos at video poker, and the players who knew wanted to keep that information a secret. And so they made up a lot of things. Let's move on. What's the most fun you've had on a trip or a play? Richard, you got anything?
Wow. Why don't you go first? Let me think about that some more.
I'm thinking back. Maybe it was at the Silver Legacy in downtown Reno. They had a drawing where they gave away a lot of different things, but a lot of it was lead crystal. And it was a four-person team where Shirley and I and Liam W. Daly and his wife, it was a foursome. They had a good Joker Wild game up there and with a slot club and stuff. So we were playing that. And we came across a stack of probably 1,000 blank drawing tickets that were totally unguarded, totally out in the open. So we took them and then decided whether or not we were going to use them. And we eventually did. And each of us filled out a quarter of them. And we got called a lot. And then coming home from Reno, we have a lot of lead crystal, which is glassware, but it's that really sets the alarms on fire. Now, Shirley was under the opinion at that time that all cut lead crystal is a perfect match for all other lead crystal, and they're all different patterns and stuff. But she was a big fan of that, so we schlepped it all home. It was kind of interesting.
You know, when I think about the fun I've had, it's never been on the actual play. It's usually stuff I'm doing with the teammates, like at comp dinners or in the hotel room or, you know, those kind of things. But the actual plays themselves, although, you know what, there's one play that stuck out to me because – I was on a play in Reno. It was a whole card play, single deck game. And it was a first baser back when they used to check under tens and aces. And so my reader was at first base and I was at third. We're the only two at the table. And I realized that when you inserted the cut card in the single deck, the dealer would take the bottom half and bring it up to the top and expose the card as they, you know, completed the cut. So you couldn't cut the deck knowing what the bottom card was, but you were going to know what the card was after you cut the deck. And both my reader and I kind of realized this about the same time. And without saying anything to each other, we were able to communicate with each other what was going on so that you would make a specific cut, let's say 13 cards. And now you know that the 13th card is, let's say, a 7. So you have to decide, okay, we want to try to deliver this to the dealer's hole card rather than to somebody's bet card. And just the fact that we were able to communicate this information and then act on it without ever having talked about this before, it just stuck out to me as a really cool play that has stuck in my mind for a long time.
Yes. Next question. How would you decide who you would want to team up with?
Oh, well, you know, aside from honesty, but the main thing is, you know, I want to team up with people I really like, right? Because you're going to spend a lot of time with them, often sharing hotel rooms and long car rides. And so that, yeah, that's a big part of it. Is people that you actually want to spend time with. I mean, yes, they have to be honest and competent, but not everyone who's honest and competent do I want to team up with.
Yeah, and I don't really have a good answer for that. It's been rare that I have teamed up with anybody. So let's go on. Say I were to find a single deck blackjack game that pays 6 to 5, but is dealt all the way down. As in, the dealer doesn't use a cut card, and the game is dealt until the last card, and the same deck is shuffled and continued to be dealt, even if there's 2 cards left in the dealer's hand. What's the advantage of this game? Do you have any comment on that, Richard?
Well, yeah, I mean, there was a game back 40 years ago at Stupak's Vegas World where Blackjack paid even money, and he would deal down to the last card. And I remember Peter Griffin, who was still alive at the time, loved playing that game. And then there was a guy named Howard Grossman who also kind of beat that game into submission, and then ended up switching sides and going to work for Stupak at Vegas World.
That Grossman or Sklansky who did that?
That was Grossman, Howard Grossman.
Because Clancy did that too. He also worked for Stupak, and he also beat that game first.
Really? I didn't know that Sklansky ever worked for Stupak.
Yes.
But Howard Grossman was the one who then sort of exposed hole cards to the casino industry and started the advent of these peaking devices that are now in all the tables. It was because of him. He was a failed hole card player, failed card counter, who switched sides. He then went on to invent the game Super Fun 21, which is a version of that where blackjack pays even money, but he added a bunch of these extra rules into the game. So anyway, that game can be counted, and sure, you can beat that game. But, you know, how much action are they going to take on it? I doubt very much. I mean, I've seen single deck games that pay 6 to 5. For example, there's a chapter in the book, Exhibit CAA, How Stupid is the Beau Rivage? Because they had a 6 to 5 single deck game where if there were 6 players at the table, they shuffled every round because they were, you know, paranoid about people counting or something. I mean, their claim was they were worried about running out of cards, which is what the article in the book is about, but you know, it's just paranoia.
Okay. Do either of you have any stories about Benny Binion and or the horseshoe? I know you have some, Richard. How long do we have?
Yeah. Well, my stories are not really about Benny. More about Ted, who was crazy. They beat up a couple of hole card players really, really badly. I mean, to the point where they went to the emergency room. They were on the 6 o'clock news showing their faces of how beat up they were. Ted called the emergency room and wanted to speak to one of them and told him that if they filed a lawsuit, they'd be looking down the barrel of a 44. And I was there at the casino. I've told this story before, just in brief. There was a guy whose his last name, I think, was Blevins. But basically, I think it was 1979. This guy got thrown out of the casino for being drunk and making, loud and disorderly. And he kicked a window outside and broke the window. And they chased him down and shot him dead in the middle of Fremont Street. And a pit boss or a security guard, I forget which, ended up taking the rap for this, although everyone claimed it was Teddy who did it. Teddy was certainly out there with the two other guys. When he came back, the police came and wanted him to go down to the police station. And he just kept saying, "Fuck you, get out of my casino." And he locked himself in the cashier's cage. And the cop came and was like, "Teddy, there's a guy dead in the street. You have to come down to the station." And he just kept saying, "Fuck you, get out of my casino." And they broke the door down of the cage and took him out in handcuffs. And his mother, is there yelling at the cops, "You leave my son alone." And, they carried him out. The horseshoe was a crazy place back then. I was always pretty afraid to play there. Another story, when I was dealing across the street at the Nugget, there was a guy back then, there were no cameras. So, you had to be up literally on a catwalk behind one-way mirrors. And, sometimes they had binoculars up there. Anyway, Teddy is up there watching this guy on the craps table, and he sees the guy stealing some chips. Now, the craps table was way in the front of the casino, and the stairs for the eye were in the back. So Teddy runs to the back of the casino, goes down the stairs, runs back to the front of the casino, and cold cocks this dealer off the craps table. And apparently, the dealers had changed shift at the time when he was doing the running. So he came in and completely cold cocked some guy who was completely innocent. Many of those kinds of stories in the horseshoe.
Yeah, I played there some, but I was a beginning card counter. And played because they had so many single decks, but I was not at a level of what we would call an AP card counter at that point. The only thing I remembered is they had their nickel chips were blue instead of red. All right, next question. Hypothetically speaking, a local tribal casino is new to offering sports betting. While scrolling through their self-serve kiosk, notice a college basketball score where the favorite is listed as plus 1100 money line instead of minus 1100. In this purely hypothetical scenario, I bet $600 through six $100 tickets and then parlay the plus 1100 in a series of two-game parlays with other favorites for around $400. The game was much closer than the spread would indicate, but the favorite wins. Cash around 3,300 of the tickets that night and had various friends or family members cash over the next few weeks, generating a total close to 13,000. Never once did me or anyone get heat for cashing the ticket. How would you both have handled the scenario? And for me, it's my only comment is it sounds like he did fine.
Well, he did well, but you have to realize that you're giving the casino a total free roll, right? If they, it sounds like this place was not getting enough action for them to realize what happened, and the parlays probably helped you there tremendously. But what easily could have happened is your bets win and they say, sorry, these bets are canceled. There was a misprice. I mean, that happens a lot. And I know that the pro sports bettors would say they just wouldn't have bet it at all, because A, they know they can get free rolled, B, that you're now labeled as a shot taker. So it's great you got away with it. It's great you made the 13,000 or whatever, but you know, just realize when it's something like that, you can totally get free rolled.
All right. Next question. Does craps have any kind of advantage play? Is it possible to win consistently in craps over the long term, perhaps through some combination of patience, shorter session, and money management? Do craps players ever get backed off or banned from a casino for winning too much? My answer is if you win too much, you'll be backed off no matter what you're playing. Things like patience, shorter sessions, and money management won't have any effect on the odds against you.
So, yes, any ideas about money management or patience or knowing when to quit, that is never going to work on any game. That is, you know, just voodoo thinking. So get that out of your head. I would also get out of your head any of this idea of being able to control the dice when you throw them. That being said, is it possible to win money at craps? Every game in the casino can be beat under very specific conditions. Those conditions may not happen very often, but occasionally they do. Oh, and as Bob said, having an edge has nothing to do with getting barred. If you win too much money at any game, you will get backed off. So it doesn't matter if it's craps, roulette, baccarat, slot machines, keno, doesn't matter. If you win too much, you'll get backed off.
Yeah, and one thing we haven't mentioned yet is occasionally a casino manager gets a great idea for a good promotion at craps and gives away the store.
Yes.
And that has happened and probably will happen again. Although overall, casino managers are getting more savvy on these things. It only takes one goofball in power to put out a real good situation. So those things can happen. We're going to break for some commercials, and then we have a lot more listener questions to deal with. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. The March promotion, $500, swipe, spin, and win. Every Monday through Thursday, earn 500 same-day base points on any slot or video poker machine between 3 a.m. and 11 p.m. to be eligible to swipe and spin the wheel of the kiosk and win a prize. The prizes are free play, resort gift cards, food, and bonus points. This is different than they've run it before. Before, video poker players needed 2,000 points. In the rules, it does not list the number of times you can play it a day. In the past, it was 4. Don't know what it is. We are taping this before this promotion takes effect. In the past, the spins were about $12 per spin, which was you needed 2,000 points to get that. Now it's 500 points, so I'm guessing it's going to be a smaller amount wins. We shall see. On next week's show, I will have quite a bit of experience as to how the first week went, and I'll give you that information. At predicted.org, there's a market where you can play small bets on the occurrence of various political events, mostly but not entirely in the United States. The election is over, so a high percentage of the active markets are now closed, but they still are. You can wager on how many votes various cabinet members will get, who will be various in cabinet positions by on a particular dates, who will be the Republican nominee in 2024, those type of things. Our listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predictit.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. BlackjackApprenticeship.com is an excellent site for those of you who wish to be successful at counting cards at blackjack. The primary value of the membership are the video course, training suite, members forum, pro betting software, casino database, result tracking software, members only podcast, and the members chat room. We've had several of their graduates on the show, and they do a nice job. Colin Jones runs a good organization there. VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Hot Roll Poker. This is a 10 coins per line game where one time in six, you get a multiplier. The value of the multiplier is determined by a pair of virtual dice. If the dice roll a 2 and a 5, for example, you'll receive a 7x for the hand. The multiplier comes on the deal, sometimes on the draw, but never both. There are no strategy variations for the game compared to the base game, and the hot roll feature is even money, meaning the dice rolls as no EV, but it does add variance. All right, we are back to our questions. A couple of years ago, you briefly went into a story about difficulties in getting money out of Poland and commented that it could be a long story in itself. It would be fun to hear the long story. Richard, that's for you.
Well, I don't want to go into the full version of the story, but so when you play in a country that has currency restrictions, this is always an issue. How do you get the money out of the country that has currency restrictions? And when we were there the first time, we did manage to get all the money changed from zlotys into dollars, which was an ordeal in itself. We would go to these little money changers. And the first one I remember, we said, because we didn't even think we could do that. And we get in there and we ask, can we change zlotys into dollars? And they said, sure. And we said, well, how much can we change? And they said, all you want. We said, all we want? And they said, yeah, as much as you want, which we did not believe. So we said, how about 10,000? And they were like, 10,000 zlotys, which is nothing. And we were like, no, dollars. And they were like, oh, no, you can't do that. but anyway, so going to all of these little places, we get all the money changed. We can't figure out how to get it out. So we leave it in a safe deposit box and decide to go home and think on it for a while. And after about a year, we're like, we got to go do something to try to get that money out. And we figure we're just going to have to smuggle it, right? But we do have one sort of Hail Mary idea, which is you're allowed to take out as much money as you bring in. So when I went into the country, I filled out the declaration form and said I was bringing in 50,000 U.S., and the guy looks at this and he says, you're bringing in $50,000? And I said, yes. And he says, come with me. And, you know, they take me into a back room. And so now I wasn't sure this was going to happen, but in case it did, I had a check made out to me for $50,000. And so the guy goes, oh, it's a check. And I said, yeah. And he, so they stamp on the form that it's a check, that I didn't bring in cash. So I now realize I'm not going to suddenly be able to say I cashed this check when we go back out. So we decide we're just going to have to try to smuggle the money out. We can't figure out any other way to do it. So we decided to fly out of Krakow instead of Warsaw, because it's a much smaller airport. And so we picked up the money from the safe deposit box. We drive down to Krakow. And, you know, one of the things I thought was interesting was that my partner, when we went to the airport, we had to drive right past Auschwitz, by the way, to get to the Krakow airport, which was kind of foreboding in itself. But I remember he could not stop eating, and I couldn't eat for like a day prior. Like, it just sort of the opposite way that stress affected us. But anyway, we were able to get through. We get on the plane. He immediately puts on his sleep mask and his headphones. And as the plane takes off, the stewardess is there tapping him on the shoulder going, sir, sir. And we look down and there are $100 bills cascading out of his pant legs onto the floor of the plane. And, you know, the straps had broken. And, you know, so we dive down and scoop up all the money, and we got all the money. But, yeah, that was how we ended up getting the money out. Not something I would recommend, but we were young and stupid and didn't have any better ideas.
Yes, it went well, but it didn't have to.
Yeah, exactly.
Next question. How much would you estimate top-tier APs earn in a year? I've heard of many making six figures. Do you know of any making seven figures a year? And personally, I'm confident that some players are making more than $1 million a year, but I don't have any exact data for anybody other than myself. It's not like financial data is publicized anywhere, especially since for tax reasons, each individual AP has an incentive to round downward.
Right.
So Richard, how would you answer?
Yeah, the top APs are making nine figures a year, but they are, you know, they're not playing in casinos. They are betting horse racing and sports and things like that. So I guess it depends on how you define AP, but they are certainly professional gamblers, and they're making an awful lot of money. Table games players, I think there are a few that are making seven figures a year, but I think it's very few. Certainly, you know, more that are making six, and there are an awful lot of people who are making, you know, minimum wage, I think.
Yes. And in video poker, there's very few making 100 a year average. Although it used to be a lot of us would make quite a bit more than that for several years straight. But the situation is quite a bit lower now.
By the way, I should mention a guy who, if he wasn't making seven figures a year, he was, you know, many years he was making multiple seven figures. And that's BJ Traveler, who was on the show. He died a couple of weeks ago. So, it was an interesting episode. He had a pretty thick accent, but for anyone who hasn't heard it, you might want to go back and listen to that episode, because he had some pretty amazing stories. So, sorry to hear that. It was not COVID, I guess. I hear it was a heart attack, but so I just thought I would bring that up to let people know he's no longer with us.
Yes, he had stories about he would prefer to stay in jail for 30 days over letting the casinos rip him out of $2,000 or something, which was an interesting story.
Yeah, actually, that story is I did a print interview with him, which you can find at gamblingwithanedge.com, and we'll throw a link in the show notes. But I think he stayed like 70 days in jail in Nepal, over basically the immigration people were trying to steal his money going out of the country or something.
All right. Next question. My question is, a 1% earnable promo, in this example, $50,000 coin in gets you $500 in free play. Does this make a game like Not So Ugly Deuces or 9-6 Jacks an advantage play if you if you're bankrolled to play $50,000 coin in? The answer is yes, it does. Your expected loss with $50,000 9-6 Jacks is $230, assuming you know how to play well, which is not a trivial assumption. Your expected loss from that much play at the NSU deuces is $136. $500 is in excess of that, so yes, is it a positive play? Keep in mind that both games come with significant swings, and you could easily win or lose several thousand dollars over the course of your play, which dwarf the $500. Also keep in mind that promotions often come with extras, such as slot clubs or mailers down the road, or maybe free rooms or meals. As a once-in-a-lifetime deal, you may or may not come out ahead this time. If you can regularly find plays with this size advantage, you can do quite well as a video poker player. Next question. I'm a gambling enthusiast, and I'm also learning computer programming. I would like to find things to program that interest me to improve my skills. Could you point me in the direction of a good source for how to figure out blackjack and video poker strategy? Well, go ahead.
I don't understand the question. Like, if you can program, then you can design a program to figure out the strategy.
Well,
am I missing something?
Well, yeah. you kind of have to know what to program. You have to be able to get the logic behind it. So programming is putting that logic down into code, but you still need the logic to create it. Now, neither Richard and I are programmers, but the website wizardofvegas.com, it's actually a bulletin board that's run by Michael Shackelford. He has a number of programmers who post there. You can pose your question there, and likely you'll be directed to old threads that discuss these matters extensively. So if that doesn't work, one of your things in video poker would be to get all the hands down to 130,000 of them. I don't have that exact number, but it's around 130,000. You start with slightly less than 2.6 million different hands, but they're all variations of 131. For example, on dealt royals, there's actually four of them, but you can just make that into one, which is ace, king, queen, jack, 10 suited. That happens four times. Similarly with four aces and a deuce, well, there's four ways that can happen. And then three aces with a deuce and a three, well, then there's a lot more ways that can happen, because the two and the three can be of the same suit. They can be, one is in the suit of one of the aces and the other's not, or they both are but different suits. So there's a lot of different ways that can happen. So there will be a lot of ace, 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 two, three hands, each one with a different kind of multiplier. If you work that all out and you get it down to around 131,000, you will have learned a lot about structuring video poker hands. So it would be a good starting exercise. All right, the next question. What is the legal status of the following? Player A earns some free play at a casino. Player B goes to the casino and uses Player A's player's card with A's prior consent and plays through A's free play. In most slot clubs, it's against club policy to play on another's card. When caught, casinos typically remove both Player A and B from their slot club, and players forfeit all accumulated points in free play. Sometimes a warning is given first, sometimes not. If you take it to gaming, gaming will usually say you broke the rules of slot club, and they were within your rights to restrict you. You can take it to a court, I suppose. Some casinos don't care. Some casinos, you can play on anybody's card without problems. South Point, for example, you can play on your card or your spouse's card. But if you get caught playing on somebody else's card, there are consequences.
Well, it's actually much worse than this. There have been many people who've been arrested for doing exactly what you're talking about, arrested and charged. I know of one case where the person had notarized letters from the other person saying, this person has the right to pick up free play for me. I've asked them to do it. Didn't matter. Arrested and charged. Now, what the actual law is going to depend on the state. But, one of my favorite quotes of Chip Reese was, just because I'm not doing anything illegal doesn't mean I'm not going to get arrested. So, just be aware that that is a very real possibility if you're playing on someone else's card. And if you're playing in an Indian reservation, your money might get stolen as well.
And there are players who will go into a casino with 10 different players' cards and cash them all. And if you get caught with that many cards on you,
good luck.
Good luck. You're going to need a good attorney. Next question, is there a limit to the number of video poker variations in one game? For example, could there be 100 play, super times pay, quick quads, magic deal, color match, wheel poker game? My answer is I don't believe there's a limit, except each one of these games is patented, and one company has to own all of the patents to do this. Now, in the example given, all of those are patents owned by videopoker.com. So they could do that. So they have had some with three. I haven't seen more than three, but I don't think there's a reason why they couldn't.
Yeah, they're just computers, right? So it's just server space and memory.
Yeah, and sometimes the games don't really go well together. Or they have a hard time figuring out how to put them together. So there are limits. But, for example, on quick quads and deuces wild, quick quads and wild card games don't really go together. Or quick quads and magic deal wouldn't go together because magic deal is a wild card game. So...
Oh, I see. You're talking about combining the games into one game. I thought yes. You were talking about how many games can go on a box. Like, could they have 100 different games on the same box?
Yes, and they do. They have far more than 100. But, yes.
I see. I misunderstood the question. Gotcha.
All right. Let's say someone who lives in Vegas and plays blackjack. What would be considered a good year, money-wise? And what would you guys consider a big win?
Was this about a card counter? Did it say card
counting?
Yeah,
card counter playing blackjack, presumably. He doesn't say. What would be considered a good year?
Well, first of all, Vegas wouldn't be the ideal place to live. But if you could squeeze out $100,000 a year as a card counter in Las Vegas, I would say you're doing really well, because this is considered a really bad place to count cards, just because they're so quick to pick you off and then they flyer you, and so it's very difficult to make a lot of money counting cards in Vegas. And most of the card counter, like full time card counters that I know, a lot of them just avoid Vegas entirely. I mean, there are some who live here, but, a lot of them just avoid it.
And that's going to be it for today. We still have lots of questions left, and keep sending them more to gamblingwithedge@gmail.com. And Currently, we don't have enough for another show completely, but we're at least another half a show. So these are always fun to do. So at the end of our show, we usually have a recommended. Richard, do you have something to recommend today?
Yeah, I also have a don't recommend. I mean, a recommend not. So I watched a series on Netflix called Behind Her Eyes, which really pissed me off. So I'm recommending you don't bother with it. And mainly it pissed me off because I don't like it when you have a show or a movie that sets up a world, and then at the end, in this particular series, the last episode, suddenly they change genres, and it went from a regular psychological thriller to a supernatural thing. And it just, so, as I say, totally pissed me off. If it's going to be involve supernatural things happening, you got to let us know that in episode one, not just tack it on at the end in episode six or whatever. But there's
the sounds like an improv game where you do a scene and they say, all right, do the same scene, but now make it a country western, and then you now make it a sci-fi.
Right. Yeah. But the show that I just watched that I did enjoy is called Ginny and Georgia, and it's about a mother-daughter. I enjoyed it. So you can check that out.
So thank you, Richard. Thank you, all our audience, for sending in the questions. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.